we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you on this live edition of the program on American Family Radio. It's our Friday edition. We're going to have Chris Woodward in the last segment, and we'll have another special guest with us in the second segment. But glad to have you with us on this program. We got a lot to cover, a lot of news surrounding the transition of President Trump, President-elect Trump to President Trump, the 47th President of the United States. And we'll get to that very, very shortly. If you want to subscribe to the podcast, we would encourage you to do so. You can just type in the name of the show, At the Core, and find the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Type in At the Core with Walker Wildman, and you can click the subscribe button, and the podcast will be queued up in your library each and every day. Psalm 136 is where we are this week. Psalm 136, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. Give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his loving kindness is everlasting. That's Psalm 136, verse 1. Operation Christmas Child, we're promoting that through basically Thanksgiving or the end of November. That is Operation Christmas Child, National Collection Week. National Collection Week begins next week, the 18th through the 25th. And there's over 4,700 drop-off locations in all 50 states around the country. And so we're encouraging you to participate in the Operation Christmas Child project put on by Samaritan's Purse. They've been doing this since 1993, so over 30 years they've been running Operation Christmas Child, delivering millions and millions, 220 million to be exact, shoeboxes given to children in over 170 countries since 1993. So very special project. We enjoy being a part of it. SamaritanPurse.org/OCC. SamaritanPurse.org/OCC is where you can find out more about where, how to pack and where to drop off your shoebox for Operation Christmas Child. Another important project, now event, that I want to bring your attention to is many of you have heard about our Activate curriculum that can be found at activate.afa.net. It's our biblical five-unit biblical worldview training curriculum, both online and with a physical workbook. And we have over a dozen professors that deliver different lectures on how to think and act biblically on the key issues of our day. Well, we're turning this Activate curriculum into a summit, and we're going to have it in Tupelo, Mississippi in June of 2025, June 12th through 14th to be specific. And that's our Biblical Bedrock Building on the Authority of Scripture Activate Summit coming up in June of 2025. So if you're interested in joining us in Tupelo, Mississippi at our Activate Summit, you can go to activate.afa.net, activate.afa.net. June 12th through 14th are the dates, and it's here in Tupelo, Mississippi. Very affordable pricing, by the way. For example, adults, 13 and older, which includes teens and adults, but $75 a person for 13 and older. And if your age is 6 to 12, it's $50. And if you're 5 and under, then it's free. So very affordable pricing there, with the highest tier ticket being $75 per person. We would love for you to join us. And we do have an early bird special going on right now. You'll get 20% off of the ticket price if you register now. If you register now, between now and January 1st, you'll get an early bird discount. Early bird 20 is that discount. Early bird 20 is that discount. Well, jumping into our news items for this segment, President Trump just continues to nominate people to fill his cabinet positions, to fill his executive agency positions, to fill his White House positions. And overall, there's been some very, very good selections when it comes to presidential appointments. One thing I want to bring your attention to is we fought hard and heavy to get Senator Rick Scott in as the majority leader, as the Senate majority leader. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get that through the finish line. Senator John Thune instead was elected for the Senate majority leader position. And we had some concerns about him and his record and his really commitment to the America First agenda. But nonetheless, I want to let you know that our efforts and our pressure campaign was not in vain, because one of the key issues that we brought up and we continue to bring up is the ability for President Trump to do recess appointments. Well, Senator John Thune, several days into our pressure campaign, actually came out and said that recess appointments are on the table. Recess appointments are on the table. And this is what he said after a couple days of pressure to commit to this. He said, "We must act quickly and decisively to get the president's nominees in place as soon as possible. And all options," listen to this, "and all options are on the table to make that happen, including recess appointments. We cannot let Schumer and Senate Democrats block the will of the American people." So, folks, your efforts to initially get Rick Scott in the Senate Majority Leader position, which would have been a great move, your efforts paid off. Your efforts were not in vain. We got Senator John Thune to commit to leaving recess appointments on the table, which Senator Mitch McConnell would not do during President Trump's last term. He would not allow recess appointments. So this is a big, big deal. And we're going to have these battles throughout the next 2 to 4 years, because there's so much work to get done. There is no excuses and no wasting time. So we're just going to have to keep up what I call a maximum pressure campaign for our lawmakers in Washington to get the job done. There is so much work that has to be done. Well, speaking of Senator Schumer, all of a sudden, after going after and attacking the Supreme Court, calling out the Supreme Court justices by name, telling them that they better watch their back, and they have no idea, he said, "You don't know what's coming for you." This was right after the leak of the Roe v. Wade opinion. All of a sudden now, after pushing the Democrat Marxist agenda and confirming all of President Biden's terrible nominees, by the way, for the cabinet positions, including Merrick Garland, which we'll talk about, Senator Schumer all of a sudden wants unity. Listen to this crying.
"Let me turn to my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. Another closely contested election comes to an end. To my Republican colleagues, I offer a word of caution in good faith. Take care not to misread the will of the people, and do not abandon the need for bipartisanship. After winning an election, the temptation may be to go to the extreme. We've seen that happen over the decades, and it's consistently backfired on the party in power. So instead of going to the extremes, I remind my colleagues that this body is most effective when it's bipartisan. If we want in the next 4 years the Senate to be as productive as the last four, the only way that will happen is through bipartisan cooperation. Democrats will be ready to do what we have consistently done."
No thanks.
"Work with both sides when the opportunity arises. Democrats will never abandon our values, but neither will we reject an opportunity to move the ball forward to make people's lives better when we can. The question is now whether or not Republicans are willing to do the same. To my colleagues on the other side, once again, do not abandon bipartisanship. It's the best and most effective way to get things done. It was true in the last 4 years and will be true in the years to come."
No thanks, Schumer. No thanks.
Outright lies.
Yeah, we don't.
Outright lies.
Yeah, exactly. We don't want your faux bipartisanship. We don't want your faux unity. This is all fake. It's fake. It's disingenuous. Let me remind the American people, folks, wake up. Unity, bipartisanship, it's all hogwash, all right? This is not a people that are serious about any sense of unity, decency, commonality. Nada, nada, nada. This is the Biden regime, including Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Remember how many times she impeached President Trump, folks? Never forget. All right? This false virtue of forgive and forget, even though the people, the offending party, never asked for forgiveness, folks, that is wrong. And what it does is it hampers our ability to ensure that the same injustices that have happened the last 4 years don't happen again. And we've got another example of this where Trey Gowdy, just this last week, went on Fox News and said, well, you know, maybe we should encourage President Trump to pardon Hunter Biden. No, we're not pardoning Hunter Biden. Okay, and let's listen to Trey Gowdy. Trey Gowdy, 2 years ago, talking about how Hunter Biden should be held to the same standard. Clip one.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us. I'm Trey Gowdy, and it's Sunday Night in America. Do you remember a few months ago, Hunter Biden was on the verge of accepting a sweetheart plea deal on gun and tax charges? The tax charges would have been misdemeanors, and the gun charge would have gone through a diversion program. I can assure you that you and I would not have been offered such a sweetheart plea deal. And Hunter Biden believed pleading to those relatively minor charges would immunize him from any other future criminal charges. So he seemed like he was in a hurry to do it, and now we know why. Late Thursday afternoon, Biden was indicted in the Central District of California on 9 charges, including 3 felonies. The charges allege Biden failed to pay in excess of $1.4 million in taxes over what was described by prosecutors as a 4-year-long scheme. And then right on cue, our friends in the media remind us Biden was suffering from addiction during that time period, which is both true and irrelevant. It's not a defense, not a legal one at least. Perhaps some may find that sympathetic, but voluntary intoxication is not a defense to any crime that I'm aware of. Biden is presumed innocent. That is an uncomfortable, at times, reality of our justice system, which is almost always forgotten when Republicans are indicted. But two wrongs do not make it right. People are presumed innocent unless and until such time as a jury says otherwise or they admit guilt. And we shall see if the justice system treats Hunter Biden the same way it would someone with a less famous father. He should be treated no better, no worse, no differently. I am not optimistic, but it is the season for miracles.
All right, folks. So there's Trey Gowdy, former congressman from the state of South Carolina, talking about how Hunter Biden should be held to the same standard as everybody else. That was 2 years ago. Now, Trey Gowdy is talking about, well, maybe President Trump should pardon Hunter Biden. And by the way, Fox News has scrubbed that clip that happened. It happened on November 8th. Fox News has scrubbed the clip. Nobody can find it online, of Trey Gowdy suggesting that Trump should pardon Hunter Biden. Here's news to the American people. No, President Trump should not pardon Hunter Biden. President Trump should have actually prosecuted Hillary Clinton for the crimes she committed while Secretary of State by housing classified information on her bathroom server on a private server. And then scrubbing and deleting all the information, all of that was confessed and admitted by Secretary Hillary Clinton and her employees that they scrubbed with BleachBit, which is a software tool, classified information off of a private server. So no, we're not pardoning Hunter Biden. We're not pardoning Hunter Biden. And just warning to the American people, be careful with Fox News, okay? There's some good things on Fox News. It's not a complete ragging of them. But folks like Trey Gowdy, who got a spot there, and others that are talking about unity and bipartisanship and President Trump needs to go easy on the Democrats. No, no, no. We've waited a generation for this opportunity to deconstruct the swamp in Washington, D.C., and I don't want to hear one more word about bipartisanship or unity. That shouldn't even be in our vocabulary. This is not what the Washington swamp wants. They do not want unity, and they do not want bipartisanship.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here with you. If you want to watch the video each and every day, you can go over to stream.afa.net, stream.afa.net, or we're on Facebook and X live streaming the video. So a lot of different ways for you to keep up with the program, stream.afa.net, or go to American Family Radio's various X and Facebook pages to watch the video as well. Also, At the Core has a Facebook page. Go there, follow, like the page, and we'll upload the show and the video and all the content each and every day. Well, we do have a guest with us this segment. Bradley Pierce is with us. He's president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion. He's also a constitutional attorney and abortion abolitionist, and he's here to discuss the future of the life movement. Bradley, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be with you.
Well, Bradley, the last 2 to 3 years has been a very interesting period for the pro-life movement for many reasons, and there's been some good advancements and some negative ones as well. But the one I want to talk about first is what's being done, or rather, let's go back to the overturning of Roe v. Wade, because that's kind of where the latest iteration of the life movement. It's a very monumental ruling. But did you expect, with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, did you expect the pro-abortion crowd to respond the way they did and move on these state ballot amendments at the speed and pace at which they did?
I don't know how many people expected it to play out exactly the way that it is. I mean, some of it was predictable in that, you know, Dobbs did not overturn it overturned Roe, but it did not actually establish any protections for preborn children. It just, you know, was the court kind of washing their hands of it and saying, all right, states, you know, you can do whatever you want. So, you know, hey, we're glad that Roe was overturned. I was part of filing a brief with the court asking them to go further and find that a fetus is a person under the 14th Amendment, therefore entitled to equal protection of the laws. The court chose to ignore that for the moment. Hopefully they'll return to that at some point and establish fetal personhood. That's what we want to see. But, you know, for now they just said, hey, you know, we're passing this on, as the court said, to the people's representatives. Mm-hmm. But as we saw, it went further than the people's representatives. It went directly to the people in many of these states that have ballot initiatives. And, you know, like you said, the pro-abortion movement jumping all over that opportunity. And, you know, we saw the midterms right after Dobbs came down that Republicans did not do as well as expected. Many because believing that the abortion issue was a real, you know, got a lot of Democrat voters out to the polls. And so I think that's why we saw a lot of folks, this presidential general election that we just saw, backing way off of this issue as well. So, because it was a winner for the Democrats before, and it was a winner for the Democrats and a lot of these ballot issues that we just saw as well.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because to me, this ballot amendment process, we've lost a ton of ground here. It's very disappointing. I didn't personally see it coming. We knew the pro-abortion crowd was going to be, you know, they're always rabid and they're intense and they're fully committed, more committed than our side many times. But right. I didn't see them using the ballot amendment process. I just didn't see that coming, because traditionally that's been a more conservative tool that's been used, for example, on life with the personhood amendments, and then on marriage as well with the one man, one woman marriage amendments over the last 20 to 30 years. But do you see any window of opportunity to really start peeling back these ballot amendments, or at least slowing down the momentum of the left on this?
Well, we can, you know, first of all, we need to reconsider ballot initiatives to begin with. You know, I don't think they're really like the U.S. Constitution promises us a Republican form of government, and ballot initiatives are anything but that. Hmm. But I don't know how easily it's going to be to rein that in altogether, the whole process. But I think that we do have, you know, there's several different fronts that we can still proceed, even in states that have passed these ballot initiatives. you know, the state constitutions, even amended with these things, they still don't trump the U.S. Constitution, right? The U.S. Constitution still says no state shall deny to any person the equal protection of the laws. Well, we believe that a fetus is a person from fertilization. And so there's an argument there that, that we want to make, that we want to see people make, and that is that the U.S. Constitution trumps all of these bad initiatives. And that there's fetal personhood under that. So certainly there's litigation that can happen there. There's legislation that people can still pass. Legislators can still pass equal protection legislation even under these. And yeah, it's going to be challenged, but that'll get us into the courts, and we'll see where they go from there. But then obviously these things need to be repealed. There needs to be a big movement toward that. And unfortunately, as you pointed out, a lot of times the pro-abortion crowd is way more zealous to destroy life than the pro-life crowd is, you know, to save it. And, you know, we've got to have pastors. We have to have Christians standing up, leading on this issue, getting educated on this issue, and not, you know, not just being apathetic, which we've seen a lot of.
We're talking to Bradley Pierce. He's president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion. Bradley, let me ask you this on the arguments that are made in favor of murdering babies, the same old talking point about the life of the mother, the rape and incest argument can be debunked very quickly because the worth of the child doesn't change no matter the circumstances in which they're conceived. But on the life of the mother argument, I've done a little bit of research into this. But it's really not. It's very deceptive the way they're positioning this.
Right.
So talk about that argument that, that the pro-abortion crowd uses, and how it's really not all what they say it is.
Well, and again, they kind of mix terminology, right? There's kind of medical ways to describe what's going on, and then legal, and then kind of the common vernacular, and they kind of conflate all that together on purpose to create confusion that really when you still have a life of the mother's situation, it's not an abortion. We're not talking about an abortion. An abortion is where someone is intentionally destroying the life of an innocent child because they don't want a child or they don't want to be pregnant, right? When you're dealing with the life of the mother's situation, that mom wants that baby, right? Everybody wants to save that baby. They're in a situation though where that's, you know, no longer possible. And so they're trying to save the lives of as many patients as they possibly can. So it's not an abortion in the common sense of the term. It's not an abortion in the legal sense. You know, almost every state that has a definition of abortion explicitly says this does not apply to the removal of an ectopic pregnancy, for an example. And so it's not a situation that is even really called an abortion. But people try to use that like, oh, look, here's an exception to abortion. Therefore, we should allow all abortions. And even if you did call it that, that still doesn't justify it. So that they do that to create confusion.
Yeah.
And again, they get away with it because a lot of people aren't educated on this issue like they should be.
Absolutely. What would you say? Once again, we're talking to Bradley Pierce with the Foundation to Abolish Abortion. Bradley, what would you say our marching orders are moving forward as a life movement? What do you see as our windows of opportunity? Obviously, we've got a lot of room, a lot of ground to make up since the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and we've lost some ground to a certain degree. But what do you see as our future, you know, 2 to 4 year plan on this issue?
Well, you know, even before we talk about legislative and political and all that, I really, you know, kind of come back to the spiritual. That's the most important. You know, our fight's not against flesh and blood, against principalities and powers. And I think we got to start with repentance. Mm-hmm. I think we need to start as a movement with where have we been apathetic? Where have we tried to focus on, you know, work within man's wisdom instead of with God's? And say, listen, we haven't been treating this child like a human being as valuable as you and me. We have not been loving our neighbor as ourselves in the way we've been writing laws. We've been writing laws with, you know, all these exceptions, and it doesn't apply to the mother. And, you know, really, we should have equal protection. That's the same laws to protect you and me, to protect preborn children in the womb. And that's been opposed by a lot of the pro-life movement. And we need to repent of that. We need to return to what God says to do on this issue. And that's to protect everybody, to treat everybody the same. No partiality, God says, right? We don't discriminate against people just because they're not yet born. We protect them with the same laws to protect the rest of us. And I think that's where we need to start.
Absolutely. Well, Bradley, tell our audience a little bit more about your organization and where they can find more about your work.
Yeah, they can find out about the Foundation to Abolish Abortion at faa.life. We've also recently co-produced a documentary along with our friends at Rescue Those. Abortion Free is the name of that documentary, abortionfree.com, or you can find it on our YouTube channel, Foundation to Abolish Abortion. A six-part docuseries, 30-minute episodes, where people can really find out what is the state of the pro-life movement today, where have we gone wrong, and how can we address the things that we're talking about here.
All right, Bradley, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
All right, that's Bradley Pierce. He's president of the Foundation to Abolish Abortion and faa.life, faa.life, or abortionfree.com. Both of those URLs will work to find out more about their work. This is important to talk about, not only abortion, but marriage, family, and other biblical precepts that are very relevant in our civic and political discourse today, because populism is on the rise. There's no doubt about that. And this is really the elephant in the room, no pun intended. The elephant in the room is that President Trump's victory is largely a populist, anti-establishment victory. President Trump's victory is largely a populist, anti-establishment victory at the ballot box. And that's not in and of itself a bad thing. So don't get me wrong here. I'm not a globalist, anti-populist, pro-establishment individual by under any circumstances. If you listen to the program, you've got that figured out. But there is a warning that we do have to heed in the era of populism, and that is where certain moral issues are pushed to the wayside. Certain moral issues like one man, one woman marriage, and the sanctity of human life are kind of pushed to the side as not consensus issues, right? I mean, President Trump made it clear during the campaign that he was not going to limit abortion under any circumstance, that he would actually be a pro-abortion president, whatever that means, right? Now, he was credited and is credited for appointing multiple Supreme Court justices that ended up turning overturning Roe v. Wade. And during President Trump's first term, he did a lot of work on the pro-life movement. He was very friendly to the pro-life movement. But this most recent campaign, not so much the case. Now, many of us were wondering, is this a political campaign strategy to get elected and then he'll govern more conservative, more pro-life? I just don't know the answer to that. We're just going to have to wait and see. But warning just to all of America, not just evangelical Christians, but all of America, and especially people who call themselves politically and ideologically conservative, folks, you long term, you can't have secular populism and libertarianism with you can't sustain that as a movement without including in that moral issues, what people call social issues, such as abortion, such as marriage, such as God's design for human sexuality. Because no standard is really man's standard. Because man tries to think that man has great ideas, right? This idea of securing America's border, which is very much a populist, popular message, it originated in Scripture. It originated in the Bible. All of the tenets of our U.S. Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, which is the first 10 amendments, those are not man's ideas, okay? And we can't miss this. The Constitution was written by Protestant Christians who were very, very knowledgeable on the authority of Scripture, very knowledgeable on the precepts of Christianity. And so I'm just warning, I'm not trying to throw water on a very excited, right, population that just voted to boot out and uproot the corruption in Washington, D.C., because that in and of itself is righteous and virtuous, okay? So there's a lot of good that comes from a libertarian populist movement, but folks, we cannot abandon biblical moral authority on the issues of our day. Because at the end of the day, we answer to Almighty God. And if we get it right on some issues, like maybe securing America's border, which is a biblical moral issue, and it's virtuous for a leader to have secure borders and protect their nation, that's a good thing, that's a biblical precept. But to get it right on some things, maybe protect American citizens, lower crime, decrease poverty. These are all good things. They're noble things to do. But then if we're over here on the abortion issue and we're saying, well, yeah, abortion's okay some of the time, or yeah, two dudes can get married, or two women can adopt children, and that's okay, because I don't really want to get in on all that. Folks, if we want to sustain a movement that is overall for the betterment of mankind, for the flourishing of what is the human experience, and ultimately for the fulfillment of God's purposes for man, which is ultimately to honor Him, then we can't pick and choose which issues we're going to think rightly about. We have to think and act rightly on all the issues that we face as a society.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to the program. As I mentioned, in the first segment, our Activate Summit is coming up this summer, June the 12th through the 14th, 2025. We would love to have you join us here at the Cadence Bank Conference Center in Tupelo, Mississippi. And you can register at Activate Summit or at activate.afa.net, rather, activate.afa.net. Right there on the homepage, you'll see the summit registration link. And you can go ahead and fill out the form there. We do have an early bird special going on, so you'll get 20% off if you register between now and January 1st. That's 20% off between now and January 1st for the Activate Summit 2025. Our theme is Biblical Bedrock, Building on the Authority of Scripture. One more housekeeping item, and then we're going to move on to Chris, I promise. We do have a few seats available for our Israel trip in February of this upcoming year. In February of 2025, the 18th through the 26th, we're going to Israel, and we do have about 10 slots available. I think we've had three people register, so maybe 6 to 8 slots still available for you to register for our Israel trip in February of 2025. And as I mentioned earlier in the week, people ask, is it safe? Well, number one, we wouldn't go, and our tour agency wouldn't let us go if it was unnecessarily risky. But traveling at all and traveling overseas comes with inherent risk. And so I encourage people, if there's any reservations, if you have any second guesses, any doubts, then you just don't need to register. You don't need to go. Okay, so that's what I tell people, because we want you to have an enjoyable trip. And Israel has the most advanced security apparatus in the world, and they don't want American tourists to be harmed on their soil. So Israel, relatively speaking, is very secure. Now, they have been in a war the last year or so, 2 years now. Well, no, 1 year. October was the 1 year anniversary, 13 months. But so we're going to have a good time. We're going to visit most of the sites that we're going to get to go to. And so if you want to go to wildmangroup.com, wildmangroup.com. Right there on the homepage, you can click Holy Land Tour and register at wildmangroup.com. But if there's any reservations, don't even register. Don't sign up, because you just need to wait until maybe a year or two down the road. But if you're a little more risk-averse and it's on your bucket list and you want to get it out of the way, then we would love to have you join us in Israel in February of 2025. Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you. If anybody sees Mike Huckabee in Israel next February, tell him I said hello.
Yeah, UN ambassador, right, to Israel. Excellent appointment, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, it was a, yeah.
Speaking of appointments, President Trump has just been rocking and rolling. And he's got a lot of appointments already placed, and they'll have to go through Senate confirmation. Mm-hmm. Some will, not all will. But the latest one, Chris, is RFK Jr.
Yes.
for Health and Human Services Secretary.
Right, yeah. Now, this one should not have come as a surprise to some, or maybe even many people. Fox News, I know, for one news outlet, other news outlets were projecting that RFK Jr. might be the head of agriculture or the head of HHS last week. But the news did come out that Trump is in favor of RFK Jr. being the Secretary of Health and Human Services. It's going to be interesting to see the confirmation battles over this and what people say. A lot of people on the left are going to be upset. I think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is the only Democrat on planet Earth that a Democrat does not want to see appointed
to
something
interesting?
In government. Yes.
Yeah, so much for bipartisanship
right.
and unity.
When I started news 22 years ago, you know, Democrats, they loved any Kennedy that ever got, you know, a phone call about something, and
yeah.
they don't like him.
No, they don't, because he's not part of the establishment apparatus. He's not bought and paid for, mm-hmm. right, by the lobbyists, mm-hmm. so they
Good
don't
point.
Like that. Chris, this is all right, so RFK Jr. clearly is not an evangelical Christian. I don't know what his faith background is, if he's Catholic or what. I have no idea. Maybe you guys do. But nonetheless, he's clearly not an evangelical Christian on the issues of abortion, mm. marriage, right? Some of the key social issues and moral issues that we talk about here on AFR. But he is very good, and we mm. do have a lot of common ground mm-hmm. on the entire health topic, right? Whether you're talking about food, whether you're talking about vaccines, he's very good. Whether you're talking about all the special interest money, right, that runs a lot of our health agencies, mm-hmm. insurance, right? He's very good on a mm-hmm. lot of these common issues mm-hmm. that we care about and that have really been neglected over the last few decades.
Yeah, I think he and his team really need to come out with some solid, consistent messaging on what exactly they're for and against. Because somebody is going to say, wait a minute, it's not limited government to tell me what I can eat and what I can't eat. And the response needs to be, it's not that you can't eat it, it's that they don't need to continue putting it in what you're eating, which therefore makes it healthier. And then if we all start eating better, it will, in his words, make America healthy again. Whether or not we see that over the next couple of weeks, I don't know. But that's definitely one thing I could see coming out from a number of even Republican and Libertarian people that are stuck on headlines like RFK says what Trump eats is not healthy.
Yeah. I do want to make one correction. So it looks like RFK Jr. is a Catholic. He did an interview in April of this year
okay.
with Fox News talking about his faith. So he talks about how the Catholicism is a central part of his faith. And he actually does talk about reducing abortion without federal, without having to get, Yeah, he talks about reducing abortion. I'm not going to try to act like I've done a deep dive on this interview okay. with Fox, but I have looked at that. I'm not sure where he is on the marriage issue. So correct the record there. RFK Jr. appears to be a Catholic, professing Catholic, and probably has some conservative leanings on some of the moral issues that we care about, such as life. But he is still a part of the Democrat Party, and mm-hmm. that party's clearly not with mm-hmm. us on the issues. But Chris, this is a generational opportunity to enact reform and change in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised at some of these, like, appointments with President Trump, because if President Trump and the Republicans squander this opportunity, mm-hmm. and, for example, they campaign with RFK Jr., and by the way, RFK Jr., he deserves this position, and here's why. He took a bold step to come over to President Trump's side and
yeah.
endorse him. Which means you're alienated from the entire Democrat Party and the Independent Party. And he brought a lot of voters. I don't know how many, maybe 2, 3%, 5%. I don't know. Maybe we'll see some exit polls that show that. But he brought some momentum to President Trump's campaign. And he was loyal to him throughout the entire campaign.
Yes, and I think, speaking of campaigns, I mean, you know, it's hard to believe this, but we're about to kick off the midterm campaigns at the start of the year. So Republicans, I think, would do best to have their little battles off camera over these and other nominations, because Democrats are going to pounce on it and say, see, these people are not all on the same page. This is not what's best for you. Donald Trump, meanwhile, says, look, I'm not running for re-election again. You and a whole bunch of other people put me in office to make things right. This is our opportunity. This is why people said correctly that this was the most important election in our nation's history. Let's get this thing actually going and not sit here and argue about it before we even go through the game.
That's exactly right, because if they squander this opportunity, voters are going to be disgruntled. They're going to be disincentivized to show up in 2 years and four years from now. So this pivot of the Republican Party now really being the party of the common man, right? Mm-hmm. The party of the working class, the party of the blue-collar voter, the party of common sense. This is – could be – looking back – now, I'm not trying to act like the Democrats aren't going to come back with a vengeance, because they will. But it could be, looking back, Chris, a historic realignment that does have lasting impact. Because some movements, such as Tea Party, they get beat down by the establishment and then they're gone.
Yeah.
But this could be a historic realignment that forever changes the Republican Party.
No doubt. This was the best Republican Party turnout since 1984.
Yeah,
that we can remember. 1980. I don't remember 1984. I've read about it, heard about it, worked with people that worked through those elections. Republicans running for president did not have the kind of results that Donald Trump had in this most recent election, except for 1984. And the reason I say that is because if you look at California, for example, the valley where a lot of the nation's fruits and nuts come from, where they're grown and harvested and shipped from, a lot of that area in there voted red. I mean, Donald Trump, he didn't almost win California, but he got really close. And he got a lot of people in places like Philadelphia. He got a lot of people in the Bronx, people that would normally have voted for the AOCs of the world, if you will. And he got all of that based on his message on things like, I'm going to make things better for the economy, for the border, and for you. And that's why the Republican Party, which, interestingly enough, 6 months ago was labeled as pretty much dead, is now alive and is the working man's party, which is not something that you and I have discussed in this program ever.
Yeah, yeah, and the difference, Chris, between these upcoming 2 years and previous Republican victories is that there's actually competent people running the show now. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about the RNC with Laura Trump, the Republican Party more broadly with President Trump and his associates. Mm-hmm. There's actually competent people running it. In the past, it's been the establishment gurus,
right,
and they're known for squandering opportunities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not really interested in permanent power. They're interested in the back and forth and the fundraising and the special interest. So the fact that we have people who are genuinely interested in permanent power in Washington, D.C., we might get more towards that. I'm not – once again, the Democrats are going to come back with a vengeance. They always have a plan. They're going to fight hard,
mm-hmm.
but – this is an opportunity to really solidify Republican control of Washington for a long time.
This is basically, think of it as a car, okay? The past Republican Party officials have got it to where they were, it's like a mechanic going, well, I can get you back out on the road, but you're probably going to need to get it fixed later. Donald Trump is saying, I'll fix it now and you won't have to go back to the auto shop.
That's right. Yeah, it's like a really good warranty. Chris, I want to talk about Representative Matt Gaetz out of Florida.
Yes.
You know, I don't know Representative Gaetz personally. I've been at events with him, but this is not a vouching for Matt Gaetz, although I like some of the things that he does mm-hmm. and says.
Mm-hmm.
But the senators that, by the way, President Trump has nominated him to be the attorney general, the senators that act flabbergasted and act offended by Representative Matt Gaetz being appointed to the attorney general position. These are the same people, Chris, that I'm talking Republicans, right? And anybody who thinks that AFR is this Republican platform, boy, are you wrong. You must not listen to my show. So let me rant against the Republicans. These are the Republican senators that voted for Merrick Garland, who is notorious for keeping J6ers locked up without trial,
right,
who raided pro-lifers' homes, jailed them. A mom over in Alabama just got sentenced to 3 years in the federal pen for protesting at an abortion clinic, peacefully, by the way, and went after President Trump with Jack Smith and with the documents case and the immunity case as well. But let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 16 Republican senators voted for Merrick Garland. And all of a sudden, Chris, they have some moral standard that Matt Gaetz doesn't meet.
Right, yeah. I heard John Bolton, he told NBC that, how did he rephrase it? Matt Gaetz doesn't have the moral turpitude to be United States Attorney General. And John Bolton called it possibly the worst pick in cabinet history in the United States. Sandy Rios, though, yesterday on AFR's Today's Issues program, told Tim Wildman that she was, quote, thrilled because Sandy has been...
She's a Florida resident,
right,
so she would know.
Sandy has been a fan of how Gaetz handled himself and how he questioned people like the Attorney General and Chris Wray and others when he had the opportunity. This is, I think, probably going to be the highest rate confirmation hearing on C-SPAN.
I agree.
Because I could see Gaetz turning questions back on the people asking him questions.
Yeah, tell me about insider trading.
Yes.
Tell me how
you justify. What do you know about it,
tell
Senator?
Me how you justify insider trading.
How's that third house?
Bobby, that...
And they're worried about his ethics.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Bobby, this is a golden opportunity at rooting out corruption because the level of insider trading is it will blow your mind,
and that's exactly true. And if I'm not mistaken, there's somewhere some written rule somewhere that protects them for doing just that, and that's why they walk out multimillionaires.
It's the way they go about it.
Yeah,
yeah, they go about it. Here's how it works, folks. Here's how Washington works. Number one, the reason that some senators would not support Rick Scott for Senate Majority Leader is because Thune or Cornyn or McConnell funded their campaign. All right. I know that 100%. That's 100% fact. The reason Josh Hawley supported, I think it was either Thune or Cornyn instead of Rick Scott, is because, well, Josh Hawley's campaign just got funded by the establishment. So that's a problem. Okay. But back to the insider trading. How this works is they just get their family members to do it. All right. They hire these financial advisors and then the senator just calls one of their family members and says, hey, you know, Joe, I heard that Pfizer was about to get a contract with the Department of Health and Human Services. And I don't know what that's going to look like, you know, how the stock's going to do. But I'm just letting you know that because it's going to be in the news.
Or who's getting the contract for the next long-range bomber, et cetera.
Exactly.
Business as usual.
And then they say, well, we're just talking, you know, public information. And so this isn't insider trading.
That's why people say the swamp stinks.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Chris, that went very fast.
Thanks
for coming on. All right, folks, AFN.net. Hey, if you want to keep up with all of the confirmations and the nominations, AFN is actually building out a page right now. It'll be up in the next few days where you can track all of President Trump's appointments in real time as we upload them. So go over to AFN.net. We'll see you next time. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you, we need to save them. That is why we have partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears the heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.